Yeah, Betfair Casino New games. Did you know Friday, if you play, free spins till you win money.
Previous deposit required. Free spins valued at 10p per spin. Opt-in each Friday. Free spins valid for 7 days. Selected customers only. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Let's bet fair casino today.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'd be hanging on to your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up a conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Hey guys, on this episode, we're going to be talking about grief. So if this isn't something you want to listen to right now, then please feel free to check out another one of our episodes.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who in a concert you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Unapologetically Black Podcast. I'm here with Roshan, very excited. Lots of great things going on this weekend, I feel like. What are your weekend plans, Shan?
I'm going to have some family time. Nice. I love that. My brother and my sister-in-law, who have become my little besties. I feel like I'm with them a lot now, all the time. Like, I even messaged them and I was like, I love you guys, come over. And they're already coming over, but I just wanted them to know that I'm inviting them again. So yeah, having some family time with them, and then I want to go out with one of my friends on the weekend as well. So I think it's a good balance. I feel like I've been trying to be more intentional with leaving the house actively. And I was saying to one of my friends the other day, I've actually been out, or I've had at least one thing to do every single weekend. And you know me, Lee, like, I don't do that.
Yeah.
I go out twice a month, and it will have to be one day of the weekend, and it has to be every other weekend. I don't do the back-to-back thing. But I've been going out after work for food. Like, I'm a new bitch.
I was going to say, I'm actually very proud of you. I saw on your Snapchat that you went out for work drinks yesterday.
Thank you.
Look at you.
I didn't even realize. Like, my boss was just like, she was like, Roshan, what are you doing? And I was like, oh. On the weekend. I thought she meant like for the weekend. And she was like, no, now. Do you want to get drinks? And I was like, yeah. And then I just went. And then I had a good time. And as I was there, I was like, wow, I really just came here. And, you know, normally I have to message someone. Should I go to the drinks? Like, I have to be forced to go. Not because I don't want to be around those people, but because like how my social anxiety flares up. So when I was there, I was like, wow, Shan, you're being an adult. You know, you're stepping
very
out.
Impressive.
You have your comfort zone.
So, very, yeah. Very impressive.
What have you got planned?
So everyone who knows me knows that I hate horror movies. And
I'm not gonna lie, I think it's cheeky that you said that, because at your house I was definitely forced to watch them.
I know. It's a weird thing. Like, it's a love-hate relationship. And I'm pretty sure that was Kemi's idea to watch.
But you didn't co-sign my I don't want to watch this enough for someone who also claims to hate it, okay?
I don't, like, you know why? Because I had promised both Tall Paul and Kemi that we would watch this movie together. Mm-hmm. You just happened to be like, you know, there. Wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah.
But recently I realized that I've been watching a lot of horror movies. And so I watched Scream 1 to 4 in the past week. I've watched, I watched The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which was really scary. So I'm even delving into the types of horror movies that I really don't like the religious ones.
And the thriller, and, you know.
And the thrillers. So I was actually looking up what the first all-black horror movie was, because, you know, in horror movies, especially in Scream, they talk about the rules and it's like the black guy always dies first. And in the second one, Jada Pinkett and Omar Epps are the first two people to die. Or maybe it's the third one, I can't remember. But like, yeah, they're black people and they're the first two people to die. But interestingly enough, this is my fun fact for the day. The first all-black horror cast was a movie called Son of Ingagi. And I'm going to watch that this weekend. I'm going to try to find it to watch it this weekend because it came out in 1940. But that was the first all-black horror cast. So I'm interested to see. I don't think I've seen an all-black horror film except for Get Out. And it's not all-black, actually. There are white people.
But I need to understand this gear change, okay? Because as someone who couldn't be paid money to watch a thriller or a horror film, although I do think I have seen the Exorcist film when I was younger, I don't know, how did the transition come about? Like, what are you watching them in the daytime and then you're watching Simpsons afterwards? Like, why did you randomly think I'm gonna watch Scream 1 to 4? Like, let's unpack, baby. What's going on?
I don't know. I don't have an explanation for it. I definitely watch them during the day. I do not watch them at night. That is 100% not happening. But, you know, I didn't think of the Scream movies as particularly scary.
Was it more just like jumpy?
Yeah, I like jumpy stuff. But I don't like the demon stuff. I don't like the exorcist stuff. So how I jumped into The Exorcism of Emily Rose, I'm really not sure.
I don't like horror or thrillers where it could happen.
Okay, I'm the other way around. Like,
you
want to
see it when it's like real life. Like, you know, there's that film, and Beyonce's in it. And there's a man. I can't remember who the man is. And
is it Obsessed? Are you talking about Obsessed?
I watched it and I just felt like completely scared afterwards. There's another film that I watched and I think it's Halle Berry. And the opening scene is literally this woman goes to like a shopping mall, retail park vibe with her kids, locks them in the car, goes into the shop, and then someone steals the car with the kids. Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
And since then, my brother and sister have never got left in any vehicle. Even at my Tesco's, by my mum's house, like the Tesco's, you could park directly outside it. You can see from inside Tesco's the outside. The security guard knows us. I don't care. He'll be like, no, man, let me watch them. And I'm like, no. they're tired, but I'm going to carry them out and we're going to go in. So I just feel like I can't bring myself to watch a horror or a thriller because it's just going to change the whole way that I maneuver life.
Yeah, I can see that. For some reason, when it's real, it almost feels that much more unbelievable because every time somebody walks down a basement, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Why would you go down in the basement? That makes no sense. And it's usually a white person that does that. But like, that's why I love Get Out so much, because I feel like the way in which he, except that he stayed there too long, it feels more realistic to me. And that's actually what I like about it. Like, it feels like this is how I might behave in a situation like that. But yeah, it's I don't know where it's come from, but I'm riding the wave until I can't ride it anymore.
We're riding it alone because I won't be joining.
And which is why I watch them in the daytime, because I'm usually watching them alone. You know, as I've been watching these horror movies and, by the way, going through EMDR therapy, it's made me think about how we process like negative emotions and how grief and fear are so closely intertwined. Like, grief can often feel like torture. And I think back to like when my parents passed, and I think back to the experience that you've had about like, and I don't know if this is something that you can commiserate with or something that, you know, feels familial, but just the torture of like loving someone, knowing someone is gone and not being able to pick up the phone and call, or not being able to see them in person. Like, you know, that idea of like constant torture of not being able to have access to the person that you once had a part of your everyday life, or once had a part of it, you know, an integral part of your life. And I don't know if that's something that you've been struggling with or have thought about recently in your own experiences.
Yeah, so I think particularly with my aunt, where I had the routine of talking to her every single Friday, Fridays have been really, really hard to navigate, because every Friday I'd wake up to a voice note of her singing like, it's Friday again. And I think when she first passed, I would always listen to her voice notes. But now, like, I don't want to listen to it at all. And I almost feel guilty for, like, not wanting to listen to it anymore. And I think also more recently, like, when it was Easter, I was talking to my brother about, like, what we're going to be making on Easter, because he was coming over with his girlfriend. And he was like, oh, can you make saltfish fritters? And I was like, I haven't made them in ages, but yeah. And then I was like, no, like, I can't be bothered. But he was on the phone with his girlfriend. And then I heard him say, like, oh, Auntie Carol would always make saltfish fritters. And then my whole heart just sank. Because I was like, okay, cool. I want to make... I didn't know if he was being serious or not, or like guilt tripping me. Like, yeah. Just like, you know, like as siblings do. And so I said to my sister-in-law, I was like, I'm going to call her Millie, which is her nickname. I was like, Millie, I'm my last speaker. And he was like, yeah. She was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, why? What was you going to say? And I was like, I was going to ask if you're being serious. Like, do you actually feel like that? And he was like, yeah, but if you can't be bothered, it's okay. And I was like, no, because I really wanted saltfish fritters as well, but I didn't want to make it because of how much it reminds me of Auntie Carol. And then I was like, don't worry, I'm going to make it. Then the process came of having to make it. And it's like, okay, well, normally when I make things like this, my aunt's the person that I call. And I can't call her. So it's like, I'm kind of making this in memory of her. And then the person that I'd call to make this would be her. And she's not here. So it's like a double whammy, I think, of loss. And I think that happened quite a lot, because I think we both spoke about before, we kind of laughed about it, but it's actually not funny.
But we laugh during grief.
But we both spoke before about the idea of like calling someone and like them not answering, and then the phone becomes new and the phone just answers and you're like, who is this? But it's like, the way it's like that is, I think that example it touches on with your question. Like, that is literally torture, like calling someone, messaging someone, and then somebody else answers and their phone is not their phone anymore, because I think it like validates or really brings true to life that the person isn't there.
And it's, I think it's interesting that you feel bad about not making the saltfish fritters, and it's like this double-edged sword, as you said. It's like you feel guilty, but then if you do make them, you feel sad about it and you're going to miss her even more. I remember the day my mom passed away on Christmas Eve, and so on Christmas Eve, one of the last things she said to me was like, don't forget the cranberry sauce for the turkey. It's very random, but that's literally the last thing that she said to me. So I was like, okay, on Christmas Day, I'm going to make Christmas dinner, like just like how we normally would. And like, let's say she passed away in the morning, that evening I started prepping all the potatoes and seasoning turkey and everything. And we made this massive dinner, even though there were like three of us there. And now I often view me doing Christmas dinner, I host Christmas dinner every year in some way, shape or form, whether for friends or family or whatever, as like my way of remembering her. Yeah. But at the same time, it also is like, makes me incredibly sad every time I have to think about the fact that I never did this when she was alive. You know what I mean? Like, she's never had my Christmas dinner, or we never got a chance to make Christmas dinner together. And it's those things that you... Everything has like a tinge of regret.
Yeah.
Even when it has a tinge of happiness.
Yeah. That exact thought and feeling you had is the exact thought and feeling I had about Easter.
Yeah.
Like the exact, because like my aunt was one of those people's houses you'd go to where like 2 weeks before Easter, the bun and cheese is there loaded. 2 weeks after it's there loaded. The saltfish fritters, like, do you get what I mean? And then I remember thinking this Easter, okay, I didn't get to do it with my mom because she's abroad. My dad was busy. I did it with my brother and his girlfriend. And I was like, maybe I should make this be a thing that I do. Maybe I just always host Easter. That's kind of like the thoughts and feelings that I went into Easter and left Easter with. And then I thought, my aunt used to always say to me, like, let me taste your hand. That's what she would say. Let me taste your hand. Let me taste your cooking. And especially when I lived with her, I wasn't as confident then with cooking. So she'd always be like, why are you always shy about let me taste your food? So it was this weird bittersweet of like, I feel like I'm honoring Easter. I feel like I was honoring Easter for her. And I feel like it's a tradition that I now want to keep going. But then it's also like, but damn, man, you didn't get to experience it.
Yeah. Do you feel like, because this is a fairly recent experience for you, but I feel like sitting on the outside and watching and observing you go through this, like it's been very like up and down, and in many instances, and I don't know if this is just because I'm not physically there, a lot of it has felt to me that like you're trying to go back to like business as usual and get on with it. Do you know what I mean? And I think we all do that. Like I certainly jumped straight back into my PhD after my mom passed, after my dad passed. Like the day my mom passed, I went back into the kitchen, you know what I mean? And I was like, let me just get on with it. Do you feel like you don't have space and room to grieve? Like, how do you feel like you've been navigating this process of grieving? Are you letting yourself grieve? Are you trying to get back to business as usual? Sorry.
I'm definitely going to cry on this episode. That's okay. I feel like there's two sides. So I feel like on one side, and I was thinking about this earlier today, I feel like, okay, yeah. So I feel like on one side, I kind of learned through COVID that like when I'm mentally under a lot of pressure, what I do is just work. That's like my trauma response. It's just to work. It's just to stay busy, yeah? So on one hand, I recognize that I have been keeping the same momentum going that I was before because that is how I am with situations like this. But then on the other side, I feel like... Sorry, I'm getting upset because it was something I was really frustrated with the other day. I feel like being like the oldest sibling and then being like... like very empathetic as a by nature. I feel like when my aunt passed, I didn't have time to like think of me because I was so busy trying to think of like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And then I even had a friend here, like one of my closest friends, when I was talking to her about like my aunt passing, because obviously she was in a coma before she passed. My friend was never ever asking me like how I am. Like she never, it was always like, how's your cousin? Or this is so sad for your cousin. And I was just thinking, like, they're not my cousin's friend. Ask me how I am. But I was just thinking, ask me, like, if I'm good, why are you worrying about my cousin? Do you get what I mean? And I feel like, because I've always been someone who, like, just keeps going, just keeps plowing, like, no matter what I go through, I'm always, like, still pushing boundaries, still doing certain things, still achieving. I think, I don't know if people really deeped how I've been feeling. Do you get what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, it's a weird internal conflict of like, maybe I should do more to vocalize how I'm feeling. But also like, I don't know. It's just a really weird place to be in. I don't know. It's a weird place to be in. Because also, for example, yeah. And you tell me if you think this is healthy or not, because this is something I'm trying to figure out. But like, I've completely avoided the whole of South London because whenever I would go towards South London, my aunt always knew what I was doing. So if I was going towards South London, if I was going to my mum's house, if I was going somewhere, she'd be like, oh, you're going to come by me, come see me for 5 minutes. And even if I was seeing her at the window, it would always be something that I like would have to do in most cases, or would want to do rather. And like a lot of my experiences of like growing up and being in school, I used to go to my aunt's house every Thursday and clean. So like even I'm going to certain friends' houses, it's like, oh, this is the friend's house I would go to come on my way home to go to my aunt. So I just avoided South London or like a large part of it. And I feel like in doing that, I feel like in doing that, it's not made me numb to the grief, but it's made me not have to like really face it head on. And the other day I went to meet my mum, who lives like not far from where my aunt lives, and she met me at the train station of my aunt's. And as I got there, my body went into complete anxiety. Like, it was crazy. It was crazy. Because I remember the last time I'd been here was when I was walking to go to the funeral. Mm. And this is the train station that I've used when I used to live at my aunt's to go to work. And literally, I've never experienced something like this. I had pain, yeah, from like my pelvis to my head for like 24 hours straight. Just severe pain. But it was anxiety in my body because we don't talk about it often enough, but like trauma is really stored in the body. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've kind of diverted from your question. I feel like your original question was, do you feel like you're processing it?
Allowed to
process it. I don't think I've been allowed to process it. And I think that's a larger part of that is like myself, I think. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm responsible for that. I didn't have to like try and be there for everyone during that process. No one forced me to do that. I chose to do that. So yeah. I can't blame it on anybody else. It's just a hindsight thing, I suppose.
It's interesting because you said, you know, about your friend, like, ask me how I'm doing or whatever it is. And I do think there's a balance to be had. Like, some people don't know how to support others during grief, right? And so there are some people who may need some direction to say, well, let me tell you how I'm doing. But I also think that there should be people in your life, and I'm sure that there are, who want to find out how you're doing and want to be there for you in a way that you need. And sometimes, especially when you're an empath or when you're someone who puts others before yourself, it's hard to ask for that. Mm. I remember saying to another girlfriend of mine is currently going through a very scary situation with her dad. Her dad's been hospitalized. And one thing I said to her, I was like, in putting everybody above yourself, make sure that you carve out time for yourself. Because I found that for me, when I was going through my parents being sick, and even with my friend passing away a couple of years ago, actually, I made it a point to make sure my brother and sister were okay. I made it a point to make sure that, you know, his widow was okay, to the point where I forgot about myself. And it actually took me a really long time to start prioritizing myself again and really not feeling guilty about prioritizing myself again. So I was saying to her, like, whatever it is that you do, carve out time for yourself to actually deal with the situation. Because I think it gets to a point for us as women who are predominantly caregivers, you spent a lot of time with your aunt, you cared for your aunt. It takes a lot of time to dig ourselves out of the hole of putting others first and then prioritizing our own needs and our own sadness and dealing with our own grief. And then in other ways, it almost becomes a scapegoat for not dealing with our grief. Like, yeah. I remember right after my mom passed and I came here, a friend's mom then got sick. And then I kind of dove into supporting her. And then I kind of dove into supporting someone else when they were going through something. And it also means that you are filling up your cup with somebody else's grief instead of handling your own, you know? Mm. And so not to say that it's your responsibility. And I guess in this world, it would always be nice to have someone just pick us up off of the floor and like coddle us for however long we need and give us everything that we need to make us heal. But there's nobody else that can do it for us. And that really sucks because I wish there was.
I feel like you told me a similar advice to that. And I think you're right. Like, there isn't really, there's not a rule book on grief, navigating it or supporting someone through it. And I think the only reason why I feel like I would know how to support someone through grief now is only because of my own experience. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like I've reached out to you when my aunt died, like not long mm-hmm. after, and I said to you, like, you know, when your best friend died, I wasn't really there for you. And I said, I didn't think I was there for you. I wasn't not there for you consciously. It's only in mm-hmm. hindsight that I realized how much I wasn't there for you or how much I should have showed up for you. And I think I apologized at the time, and you was like,
you did.
And I've had a conversation around it because this was really like, it's been a very awakening experience on so many different levels, but it really made me look at myself. So like, in in the frustrations and the upset, I guess I have to like lack of support from certain friends, I also have compassion towards them as well. Cause I feel like if you haven't been through that level of grief or you haven't and had a direct experience to this, then I understand why you wouldn't know how to respond or act in a way beyond what you may already have. But I wanted to ask you, like, in your experience of navigating grief, and I guess it's, you've got kind of twofold, you've got your parents and then you've got your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
What has been useful for you in terms of support? Like, if anyone's listening and they may have someone that they need to support, what do you think was actually beneficial to you? Liv's auntie recently passed in December.
Oh,
and I was talking to Liv and we was laughing because we was like, people are like, oh, they're in a better place. And we was like, fuck the better place. You're here on earth with us because we're selfish. Like, not sorry for your loss. Fuck the loss. And we was literally just laughing and laughing about like the phrases that people say, obviously with good intention.
Intentions.
Like, it's nothing's bad about it. It's not to say don't say those phrases. But it's just like when you're really in the thick of it, it's almost humorous to be told like, they're in a better place, they're not in pain. No, I'd rather them be in pain than be here.
Do you know what my top most hated phrase is? Time heals all. Because no, it fucking doesn't. It makes not one iota of difference if you don't do the work, right? If you don't go through the job of healing. Because 10 years later, my mom passed away. My dad passed away 10 years ago. No, my mom passed away 10 years ago this year, 2024. I still miss her. I still wish she was here. I still cry all the time over the fact that she's not with us. So that's like my number one top hated phrase. And it's funny, I was going to ask you the same thing. I was like, what's the one nice thing or what's the nicest thing that someone has ever done for you while you've been grieving? I think for me, the best way that I can be supported, and it's funny because, you know, typically I don't like asking for help, right?
Mm-hmm.
But during my parents' passing and during even while they were sick, so many people who know me well and know that I'm not big on emotions didn't try to force me to talk about it until I was ready. Mm-hmm. But what they did was they helped in very practical ways. I had one girlfriend who would come and do my hair at the house when I couldn't leave. She'd come and flat iron my hair. I had another girlfriend who was doing grocery shopping for me because I couldn't make it to the grocery store. I had another girlfriend who helped me to plan my aunt, actually she's not my girlfriend, who helped me to plan the entire funeral before my dad had even passed, so that when it came time to actually plan the funeral, everything was almost taken care of. So I think sometimes the practical support of just lifting things off of your plate actually is some of the nicest gestures that people had ever given me. Yes, of course, every gesture is welcomed and every gesture is appreciated. But in terms of what I needed, it was just something to make my load lighter. And so many of my girlfriends came through and did that.
Yeah, I think I resonated with that. I think for me, it was a mixture of practical things and then maybe validation. And I think the validation thing's interesting because why do you need to be validated for grief? But I think there's not a lot of people that I know, I'm not saying it doesn't exist for other people, but there's not a lot of people that I know that have a relationship with their aunt as close that I did with my aunt. And it's not Aunt Olympics, it's just the reality, yeah?
Yeah.
Especially given that this was my great aunt. Like, a lot of my friends, they just don't have that. And so the grief that I feel like doesn't feel like how I would expect to feel for an aunt. It feels like what I would anticipate feeling maybe for a parent, because I used to always say my aunt was like a second parent. And so with that, I think there was a need for validation at times that like the level of pain I'm feeling makes sense. So like I had a friend, for example, because before my aunt died, I kept going to hospital every day. And I had a friend and she was like, have you left the house outside of going to the hospital? And I was like, no. And she was like, you eat it? And I was like, no. And then she came to my house, she brought me food, and then we like went for like a walk. And there wasn't really a pressure to like talk about what was going on. It was just, she was just being with me. And I remember, I really didn't want her to come. And she listens to this podcast, so she'll know. I really didn't want her to come. But when she left, I messaged her and I was like, thanks so much, because I really haven't left my house outside of going to hospital. And I had a friend, like, more recently, and she sent me a paragraph. I was with two friends the other day, and I basically just broke down, and I was just really upset about, like, grief and just frustrations and stuff like that. And I was talking about how I have felt really isolated. And then they just listened to me. They didn't make it about them or, like, feel like I was guilt-tripping them, because it wasn't direct to them. I was just talking about how I feel in general. And then she messaged me the next day, and she was basically like, I haven't brought up your aunt to you because I feel like I don't want to ask you about your aunt on a day you might be having a good day, or I don't want to ask you about your aunt and it feels insensitive. Like, I don't really know how to ask you about your aunt. So first of all, do you want to speak about it with me? And if you do, how often and how do you want me to approach it? And then the second thing was, is there anything else I can do to support you? And like, that in itself was so, like, I can't explain it, but like, it was just, I'm probably never going to forget that, because it was really just like, okay, so you understood that you maybe haven't supported me how you feel like you should have, but you actually just don't know. And that level of accountability was really reassuring. And I remember I said to my friend, like, I actually would just like to see you. And I had seen her, but like, it's not one of my friends that I see often. I was like, I'd actually just like to see you. And she was like, okay, no problem. Let's book in a date to do this. And she basically planned, I had a Monopoly night at my house the other day, if you remember. And she basically planned that for me at my house. And I felt so much lighter that day. I had another friend who, just before my aunt passed, sent me flowers with a note in it. And the note basically said something along the lines of, the sentiment of the note was basically saying that, like, you did a lot for your aunt when she was here, and I know she'd be so thankful for you. And that meant a lot. And then I guess one of my other friends, she messaged me when my aunt passed. She sent me a card. And in the card, it was basically like, bro. I don't know how you're going to get through this. I've never been through this myself. But I just know I want to be next to you as you go through it.
Oh, that's
And then she was just like, if there's any way I can help, if I can come to the funeral with you, I would love to. And she did.
Oh.
So I guess it looks like different things for different people. I guess it depends on the relationship you have with the person that's passed, and I guess how you are as a person in general. Definitely a hypocrite when I say this, but sometimes being told, like, I'm here whenever you need, it's not enough.
Yeah.
Because what does that mean? I don't know what I need when I'm dealing with grief, actually.
I was just going to say, like, how do you know what you need when you're in the middle of grieving? Not to say that everybody should know exactly what they need, when they need, how they need, or whatever it is. But if you know your friend well enough, you should know things that they like, even if it's not directly related to the grieving thing. Just do something nice for people, I think, is always a good way to start, just to let them know that you're there. But what about work? Like, because I've never been in a situation where, you know, when my parents were sick, I was in school, and then I've worked kind of remotely for the rest of my career. But what's it like navigating grief at work?
The thing with my experience is that I was on holiday, and just before I came back, my aunt went into an induced coma. And despite the fact that I was extremely, like, positive and hopeful, I was then able to alert my workplace that I'm not coming back in until my aunt is out of the coma. The time that my aunt came out of the coma, she's passed away. So because of that, it made the process a bit better, I suppose, because I wasn't, like, in work when it happened and having to leave the office and things like that. But, and again, this is no animosity towards my managers or manager at the time. But I felt like I was constantly being checked in, like, oh, are you okay? When are you going to be back to work? Or like, oh, are you okay? Do you think you're ready to come back? Not when are you going to be back to work, but do you think you're ready to come back to work? And I just feel like that's really, really, like, unhelpful, because I understood that as I need to come back to work as soon as possible, I don't want to lose my job. I then came back after 2 weeks and I was not ready at all. So I felt really pressured, and I feel like when I came back, I remember talking to my manager and saying, everyone's going to be asking me where I've been for so long, what's going on, I don't want to have to deal with that. And because I worked at unsociable hours, I guess there was less people in the office anyway. And my manager kind of said, okay, you can work on a different floor, you can work in a different room if you want at times. And I think there was flexibility around that.
You felt pressured. It's like,
I'm coming in, I don't want to hear your joke. I don't want to hear office gist. I don't want you to ask me how I am. And I remember there was a day, especially because I'm someone, I've moved jobs now, but at this office, I was someone who was like friends of everyone. And I'm like, I'm used to always being jokey and like just chatting and just being like a little class clown. When I'm now coming in and I'm silent, people genuinely want to check in from a genuine place of what's up with Shan. And I remember there was a day and my friend was like, are you good? I said, yeah. Then he goes, are you sure you're good? I said, yeah. And then when he left his shift, he came and found me and he was like, what's wrong? You're not good. And I was just thinking, my guy, if I tell you what's going on, you're not going to know how to respond. So leave me. And I remember just saying to him, like, no, I'm fine. It's just, it's not the best week right now. So I think, yeah. I don't know if that really answers it. How do you navigate it with work? I don't really think I navigated it that much because I think I had the benefit of working unsociable hours, not having that many people there. I think I benefited from the fact that I worked in a job that was predominantly a black space, so that when I wasn't feeling 100%, I was able to just be like, oh, I'm not in the best of moods right now and feel comfortable doing so. Whereas I feel like if I was working in an environment that was predominantly white, I would have felt like I had to show up more like happy and preppy, you know, with a fear of being mistaken for being angry or being mistaken for being moody or being bitchy or whatever.
Yeah, I always say that grief definitely is in waves. Like, it's, and I know that you said this earlier, like sometimes when you're in a good mood or something, when something good happens and you want to celebrate, there's also this like immediate feeling of guilt or grief or sadness that accompanies it because of the fact that you want to share with this person, or even just feeling guilty about feeling good about something else going on in your life because you should feel, or, you know, some people feel like they should be consumed by grief altogether and it should just be this one long thing and then you just get over it and you move on. But it really is something that, you know, over time, you learn to deal with it better, but I don't know that it's something that ever really goes away. And so sometimes you'll be in the midst of having a great day and something will snap and you'll remember something and it will bring you back to that moment where you lost the person. And so I think for me, what it's really important, and we talk about this in terms of therapy, is to consistently check in about that. Like, there's no way of getting over something without going through it. And I think understanding that this is a process that everybody has to go through and you can't just like worm your way out of grieving is something really important that I don't think culturally we understand. Like, for me, I think most people think, oh, it's been 10 years now, like, why is she still posting a picture of her mother on her birthday? Or it's been 20 years now. But people miss people. Missing somebody doesn't stop, it doesn't end. You know what I mean? The fact you, there are things that happen to you throughout your life that you want your aunt, you want your parents, you want your friends to be a part of, and they can't do that anymore. And not having them, that's a constant source of grief that never goes away. I can't remember who it was that said it, but somebody said, like, grief is love that you're not able to express because the person isn't around anymore. And I think that's really telling, because like, you have this love that you can't express because the person isn't there. And like, that's a weight that wears on the person that is grieving.
I saw an Instagram post the other day from Charlene White, the news presenter in the UK. And she was talking about her experience of grief, losing her mum at a young age. And she spoke about the fact that she, when she had her daughter, or son, no, I think it was a son, because she had Alfie. When she had her son, or let's say her child, she went through this weird motion of people trying to reach out to help her, but her not wanting the help because she wanted it to be her mum. And like, seeing her friends who have kids with their mums and feeling a sense of jealousy because those friends aren't, she didn't get to have that experience with her. And then she put up a post where like loads of people had DM'd her saying that's exactly how they feel. And I think that's why grief is so interesting. It's because you think you've gone over, you think you've got over the first bit of the funeral. Then you think you've gone first through the first 6 months. Oh, and then it's their birthday. And then it's Christmas. Oh, and then it's the thing that they said that you did the thing that they said you would do. And then it's just constant. Do you get what I mean? And I remember reading that post that Charlene did and thinking like, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Because how do you even process that or talk to someone about it? I guess outside of like a therapist.
Yeah.
And can I ask you, like, I remember before we spoke about therapy, we always talk about therapy, but did you go to therapy specifically for grief, or have you ever gone to therapy specifically for that?
Yes and no. So after my parents passed, I stopped going to therapy, actually. And I remember seeing my therapist just like literally in the supermarket or something. And she was like, I know that you're avoiding dealing with this, but just know that you'll have to come back to it at some point in time. So I was like, cool, no problem, I will. A couple of years later, when I did decide to go back to therapy for what I thought was about my parents, when I started working with my therapist, she was like, I think you think this is about your parents, but it's actually about so much more. It's actually coming from a deeper place of how you deal with certain things, including my parents. And so it became even so, no, like I've gone with the intention of dealing with my parents, but I've never actually talked through my parents or losing my parents in therapy, which is interesting actually, because that was my intention. And then it became about so many other things that went far beyond them. And probably more about how I navigated the grief and how I poured into others instead of pouring into myself. That part of it became a huge chunk of the therapy that I had.
Because one of my friends the other day was like, oh, Shan, like, would you go to therapy to talk about grief or to talk about your aunt? And I was like, yeah, but when I'm ready. And I was like, I said, yeah, but when I've processed it for myself, like, yeah, but when I know how I'm feeling. And then as I was saying that, I was thinking to myself, but maybe I'm never really going to process it. Maybe I'm never really going to know how I'm feeling. So by the end of this year, don't hold me to it, but by the end of this year, I hope to at some point of like taking that step of going.
You should. I mean, I do think that you're right. You'll never really know how you feel. You know what I mean? You'll never, when is the right time? Like, how will you know? And maybe there will come a time, but I'm sure it will just be something conscious. Or it might be something that like the straw that broke the camel's back. And then you're going into therapy, disheveled and on the floor and coming from a worse off place than if you went in voluntarily.
Yeah. Do you remember in COVID, yeah, when I was talking to you about like my headspace and what I was navigating, and I was saying like, I'm just trying to get back to the old me. And you was like, Shan, she doesn't exist, baby. You need to think of the new person. You've gone through a big shift. This is going to be a new version of you. I kind of feel like with grief and with having such a big loss that I'm having to go through that process again. And so I wanted to ask you, like, is that something that you can relate to with both like your mom and your dad, of like, feeling like you have to not reinvent yourself, but become someone that exists beyond them, I suppose?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's funny because I say this all the time and I feel really guilty every time I say it. I feel like a horrible person. But there are so many things that I've done that I wouldn't have done if my parents were still alive. I don't think I would be doing this podcast or having DBW as a part of our lives or part of my life if my parents still existed. Because culturally, there's so much to be said about not airing your dirty laundry or not being too vulnerable, not showing or sharing too many of your experiences. And obviously I talk about my parents a lot, and my parents would definitely, at least my mom would definitely have listened to this podcast. And so there's a certain freedom, again, I feel horrible for saying this, that you get when people who have influence in your life and in your decisions are no longer around. Because one of the biggest things that I had to deal with in losing my parents is
making my own decisions. Like, what do I want versus what would make them happy? Or what can I do? What do I want to do that wouldn't disappoint them or wouldn't embarrass them? Or, you know, I had a freedom from the, you know, the shackles of my like cultural restraints in terms of what I'm able to do and what I'm not able to do simply because they're not here. And it's not that I don't miss them. Of course I do, but it's been a, as much as it's been a part of my sadness, it's been a part of my growth as well.
I think that rings true to a lot of people who take on like full-time care responsibilities as well. Because I've joined this, not grief support group as such, but like I'm on this, I follow this Instagram page. I think it's called Untangle Me Grief or something like that. I'll put it in the description. But I've just found it really, really useful to kind of see or read different comments from people that are like going through grief. And there was a comment I read that was about that. So it was of someone saying like, they almost feel guilty that they feel a sense of freedom. They're able to just live life on their terms now, as opposed to living life around the schedules or around the eating times or the cleaning times or the cooking times of the person that they were caring for. And I guess there is something to be said about that, which is like a whole nother layer of grief and like navigating it. Because it's like bittersweet, I guess, as it might feel like for you.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think towards the end, there was a lot of burnout that I was experiencing in terms of caring for my parents and even like PTSD. I don't know if I told you this, but like I used to get up in the mornings to make my dad tea before he would get up. So that he would have tea when he got up in the morning, because it was just a thing for him. And I remember coming back to the UK and I remember waking up consistently, like every morning at like 4 or 5 a.m. because in my head, I had to get up and make tea. But there was nobody to make tea for anymore. And so it takes a while, as I said, it takes a while for your body and your mindset to shift back to thinking about what you need rather than what others need and what you've been tasked in giving them. So it is bittersweet. Like you want your parents to be there, but you want the healthy versions of them, you know, and you can't have that. It's just, and it's funny, I was talking to somebody else about, I was talking to somebody yesterday about grief when somebody is sick. And you know, you're never fully prepared, but you can say goodbye, you can see them, you can spend time, you can make up for lost time. Versus when somebody dies or passes away unexpectedly in a car accident, or like my friend who drowned, and the fact that I don't want to compare it because all grief is bad, but it's definitely different. And I think it requires different strategies. So there's so many different types of grief I feel like that people can go through. You know, loss of a child is very different from loss of a parent, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, because I feel like, I guess, you know what's interesting about like having conditions like anxiety and maybe not depression, but let me just focus on anxiety, what I can talk to. As much as sometimes I find my anxiety, or I have in the past found my anxiety like really like all consuming. When my aunt passed, I was so grateful for it because I had a fear of losing her and then feeling a sense of regret for not spending enough time with her. I've overdone the amount of time I spent with her. And I feel like when you talk about, you know, someone dying suddenly versus knowing someone's going to die, I feel like that's like a really core difference, is that you kind of don't get the opportunity to make amends for the regret that you may have. So if you know like someone's going to die within 1 month, you can spend every day with them for that month and then not feel regret afterwards. And I feel like when my aunt passed, that was one thing that I felt so happy about. I was like, wow, like she's passed and I'm sad. Like immensely sad, but like I'm so happy that I was able to experience this woman. Do you get what I mean? Like I'm so happy that I was able to be intentional about her when she was here. Like she didn't pass and I'm like, I wish I spent more time with her. I don't know if I could have spent more. Do you get what I mean? Like she didn't pass and I thought like, I wish I bought her a birthday present this year to tell her how much I loved her, because I did that randomly all the time. Like, do you get what I mean? And I think like, if grief taught me anything, or if my experience of my aunt taught me anything, it was that like being intentional with the people we love in our lives is so important. but like beyond our imaginations. Because if I think, if I wasn't intentional with my aunt, this whole process would be like 50 million times worse. If I had to then deal with a layer of like regret or wishing I did certain things. Because I feel like we spoke about earlier about the idea of having certain moments come up and feeling like we want these people to be there. But that's like, that's just going to be a part of me for everyone. Do you get what I mean? But you can't really blame yourself for that. But I think having to go through grief and then blame yourself for like, I wish I could have done this, I wish I could have done that, is a torture that I don't ever want to go through. So I just think, for me, that's something that I've taken away from it. But on that note, actually, of like someone being there and then some, or on that note of like going through a process and wanting someone to be there who's not, what was like the wedding like for you with that? Because obviously, when you got married, your mum and dad both wasn't there. Traditionally, for some people, their father will walk them down the aisle. Mm-hmm. And when, I know that at your, obviously I know because I was there, but like at your wedding, you had like a special table, which was like in honor of your mum and dad. And like when we, when you came in, which I thought was such a nice touch, like when you came in, the, like into the church, there was a table with like pictures of them and stuff, which obviously helps to make them feel like a part of the day, even on a spiritual sense. But with them not being there, like physically, what was that process like for you? Like leading up to the day and then maybe during the day and after.
Do you know what's funny is that every milestone that's come up in my life, I have avoided. So when I graduated with my PhD, I told everyone not to come. And I just went by myself, graduated and left. And I think everybody thought it was weird, and some people were probably really upset with me because they wanted to be a part of that day. But I couldn't fathom going through that day with my parents not being there. And so I just did it alone and kind of didn't celebrate whatsoever. All of my friends celebrated with me after the fact. So I think when it came time to the wedding, I was really intentional. I was like, this is the one thing beyond maybe having a child where I can make this about me, and I can celebrate the fact that I'm joining a new family and kind of not filling a void, but maybe just plastering a gap, you know? And so I made sure that my parents, I felt my parents' presence through every single aspect of the wedding. So I took some of my mom's saris and we turned them into gift favors for the guests. My hair was inspired by my mom. We had the pictures at the table. I think my brother, who did walk me down the aisle, was very conscious of the fact that, you know, he was like, oh, you know, mommy and daddy'd be really proud of you. And so I don't want to say that I didn't miss them, but I felt them there. Like when I was dancing with my brother, I remember distinctly thinking how much my dad would have liked the song that we danced to. When I was thinking through the music, I was thinking how much they would have enjoyed it. And so I think I tried to make them present as much as I possibly could. And so it didn't affect me as much as I thought it would on the day, because I think I intentionally sought out to make it, this is the one thing that I'm going to celebrate where I'm not going to be sad about the fact that they're not here. There are certain things that I feel like, and this just happened organically as part of the wedding, but for me, especially when I was grieving, there were certain things that I did that helped me through the process, and things that maybe most people wouldn't think of. Like my godmother, I remember her saying to me, always get your hair done and your nails done every 2 weeks because look good, feel good. And actually, it did make a difference. Like that element of just feeling clean, feeling pretty, that self-care that you carve out time just for yourself made a huge difference in terms of navigating my grief. And I don't know if there is any things that you did that kind of helped you just to feel better on a day-to-day basis?
So mine was staying consistent with the gym. I feel like around the time she passed, there was this thing I saw on TikTok where a PT was like, don't make gym about your physical health, make it about your mental health. And it was like a light bulb moment for me when I was like, gym really does impact me in a positive way on my mental health. So now that this is happening, I can't stop going to the gym. And it was really weird because when I was first going, I would have moments where, because I've got a trainer, where I'd be training with him and I'm like, I can't bother anymore. Like, let's stop. Like, this is, I don't want to do this. And I'll just imagine her being like, don't you want those strong legs for summer? Or don't you want to look good for this person? And so it was a really weird juxtaposition of like trying to do this for myself to navigate grief, but then also feeling really close to her because somehow her voice was in my head when I was there. So I feel like being maintaining my commitment to the gym, which has like doubled the amount of time I go a week now compared to before. And I think also allow myself to cry. I think that kind of comes in a weird reverse way of self-care. Allow myself to cry. Like, I cry myself to sleep a lot of the time, and I don't always feel sad when I'm doing it. It's weird. Like, I'm crying just a release. I'm sad, but I'm not feeling sad. I'm feeling better because I'm releasing that emotion. So yeah. I think that's being part of it. And also, like, not forcing myself to stay at home. Like, I love being at home, but actually leaving my house and being around people I love and care about has helped me to stay, like, somewhat positive throughout this process. So, like, at the start of the call when I was saying to you, like, oh, like, I've been going out more and doing more things, that's been something that I've carved out intentionally for my grieving process, because I know that throughout this time, I felt very isolated, but I don't really need to feel isolated because I genuinely have people around me who care about me, even if they don't know how to show it through this specific trial or like season of my life that I'm in. So it's just about being intentional with those people. So I've just been reaching out, like, I'd really love to get something in the diary, even if it's in the next 4 months, because it gives me something to look forward to right now. And people have been receptive to it for the most part. But I guess people have to just listen to their bodies, really, because, like, I think it's going to be different for, like, everyone.
Yeah. No, agreed. I think one of the things that definitely made a huge difference for me as well was being able to talk about it. I think sometimes as a caregiver, and I think this is very specific maybe, I was always afraid to share, like, the nitty-gritty details of what that process looked like for me. You know, having to take people to hospital, cleaning up blood or doing other things. And I didn't ever want to trigger people, so I just kind of kept it to myself. But having friends who allowed me to talk about the stuff that nobody wants to hear about was that version of, like, release for me as well. But you're right. I think people just have to listen to their bodies and respond to that and not ignore the signs that your body is giving you.
Can I ask you, on the note of talking to people, how did you find it with talking to your siblings about losing a parent? Like, is that something that you guys did?
No, actually, it's funny. I think I probably asked them at various points, like, do you miss mommy and daddy? But we've never had, like, a real conversation about what it's like to not have parents anymore. And it's weird because we lost them later on in life, right? Like, I was 30, my brother was 33, my sister's 35, although we're slightly younger. But yeah, like, we just, and because we're not, none of us are emotional, particularly emotional human beings, I think we found solace in humor and making jokes about it more than we did actually having serious conversations. So no, it's actually something that we've not discussed at all.
I just find it interesting. I find it interesting just, like, as we wrap, because obviously I spoke about how, like, grief can be very isolating, and you kind of agreed to that earlier on as well. But I think sometimes as part of the process, we almost isolate ourselves because, like, for example, when you lost your parent, your brother and sister is never going to know exactly how you're feeling or have the same experience because they're not you, and your relationships with your parents are very much individual. However, if anyone was going to have a remote understanding, it would be them. So it's interesting that you didn't then go to them to have certain conversations. And similar to me, like, I know I would probably, I think with my mom's really been there to hold a space if I wanted to like talk to her about it. But then because I see how upset it makes her get, I don't want to talk to her. So I find it's interesting that with grief, it's like the people who are closest to you in terms of your experience that will be able to directly understand, you almost don't want to talk to because
they're the grieving too.
It can really take you to. And also they're grieving too. So it's like you're going to have to be conscious of how we might be making them feel in the process. But yeah, I say that to say grief is not linear, baby. One shoe does not fit all.
100%.
Doesn't fit
do
all.
Do what makes you feel good. I think that's all that you can tell somebody is do what makes you feel good. And don't try to skip the process. Grief happens to all of us. Unfortunately.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast brought to you by the Dope Black Woman CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Woman across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.
Yeah, Betfair. Casino. New games. Did you know Friday, if you play, free spins till you win money.
Previous deposit required. Free spins valued at 10p per spin. Opt-in each Friday. Free spins valid for 7 days. Selected customers only. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Let's bet fair casino today.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on to your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.